The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back!
That's a buzzer! Right here on 960theref.com.
What is up, 960 The Ref listener? Sam Franco, Chris Brame along with you. It is The Crossover right here on 960theref.com. And right off the bat, late breaking news, we are on iTunes officially. We have a sweet new logo. Props to the Cox Media design team for that. And Brame and I, very happy to tell you guys, we are on iTunes, so you can head to iTunes, subscribe, that way you never miss an episode. And of course, leave us a nice little review, because we deserve it.
Oh, I think we do, absolutely. To sit in here for like a half hour every week is is a grind. It's just grueling hard physical labor. So yeah, reward us with kind reviews.
Yeah, no doubt about that. So very excited for this week's episode. We've got Georgia in fall camp, we've got the Falcons in training camp, and we've got the Braves, who didn't really do anything at the trade deadline other than get swept by the Phillies in a four-game series for the first time since 1949. So we'll hit all of those topics on this edition of The Crossover, episode number 14. But we'll start with the Dawgs, as they have hit fall camp. They had their first practice yesterday as we record this on a Tuesday. And I'll try to act like I'm not super checked out, because I'm going on vacation for the next like 5 days. So I will definitely try to act like I'm actually wanting and caring about doing this episode right now, even though I'm looking forward to my vacation. But yeah, the Dawgs hit the field over at and behind, I guess, the Butzmeyer Complex. And really, the big thing for Georgia is all of these offensive linemen, and that's what Kirby talked about in his first press conference of fall camp, was the shuffling on offensive line that they're going to do for these first couple weeks, just to kind of see who the guys are that are going to end up being the starting offensive linemen for this team. And that's a huge thing for not just the running game, but also for a young quarterback in Jacob Eason.
Yeah, and you've got to figure, I mean, these freshmen are gonna play. I think a lot of fans probably want to see these freshmen play, and I think the question is, it's not if, it's when. How soon we'll see them, and you know, what is the projected offensive line for, what is it now, 30, 32, whatever days it is away from Appalachian State, versus what the offensive line's going to be when the Dawgs line up against Tech Thanksgiving weekend. But with, you know, knowing what Georgia's offensive line looked like last year, knowing what Georgia's offensive line has coming back this season, and also knowing how highly rated some of these linemen were, if they're not playing, to me, it almost seems like a bad sign for them.
Yeah, exactly. So definitely interested to see how all of that plays out with the battles on the offensive line. And that's the thing. A lot of people say young offensive linemen usually means a bad thing. Like, if you have an inexperienced offensive line, don't tell that to Isaiah Wilson. I think that guy, if he ends up starting for Georgia somewhere on the offensive line, could be a good thing just because of how big that man is.
Well, and he, more than any, is the one that I'd probably like to see get plugged in there pretty quickly. When you just look at a guy like last year at Alabama, Jonah Williams, who started every game for them at right tackle and graded out as their best offensive lineman last year ahead of Cam Robinson. Now Robinson moves on to the NFL, so Williams will move over to left tackle this season. Greg Little started at left tackle for Ole Miss, and those were offensive linemen that Isaiah Wilson was recruited or was basically rated as highly as on the offensive line. So I'd like to think that Wilson would have a chance to come in here and play pretty much from the get-go, just like those two guys did at Alabama and Ole Miss last season. And you would think here, just given the state of Georgia's offensive line, I mean, there definitely should be more of an opportunity here than you'd think maybe at a place like Bama.
Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. So that's going to be the big storyline. I know there are obviously some others, like the competition at wide receiver to see who's going to come out and be the starting wide receivers. Tight end and running back, I think we're pretty good there. We know who's going to be starting and who's going to be getting a lot of the reps there. Although, one thing for running back that I'm intrigued by is, obviously, Nick Chubb and Sony Michel. Those are the two guys that are going to be the bell cow backs. But how much do we see of a Brian Herrien, who proved a lot last season? You know, how much do we see of an Elijah Holyfield, who's going to be starting the season off with a suspension? You know, we don't know how long that's going to be, but that's just the lay of the land here at Georgia. And then the new guy coming in, DeAndre Swift, who was a big recruit who had that great commit video, I guess, that was shot up there in Philadelphia. So there is a lot of talent in the backfield and only one ball to go around.
I would think that we'll see. We saw a good bit of Herring in last year. You know, like you said, Holyfield with a likely suspension with how deep the backfield is, that might set him back, and we might not see a ton of Holyfield. I was expecting Swift to come in here and certainly have a chance to battle it out on special teams. It's interesting that Georgia signs this JUCO, Crumpton from California, to come in. And I mean, given his size, I guess there's all the comparisons being made to Isaiah McKenzie, but You know, I would have thought that already on the roster there were definitely options in the return game at punt return and at kick return, but you know, obviously the coaching staff wanted to give another guy a look too, so they're bringing Crumpton and maybe as a return specialist. But I definitely would have thought that Swift would have had a chance to, and maybe still does, contribute in that way. But I would think for sure Swift is, he ain't gonna redshirt either. He'll play.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that Kirby Smart has shown he's not shy about playing freshmen. So I think we will see a lot of freshmen. It just depends on where those guys end up going. And switching over to the defensive side, you know, there's a lot of hype around this Georgia defense. And if Trenton Thompson can get back to playing the way he did in that bowl game and the way he did towards the back end of last season, you know, we've talked to some people, including Barrett Salee of CBS Sports, who thinks Georgia's going to be a top 10 defense nationally this year.
Well, I mean, they were definitely a top 15, top 20 defense last year too, everywhere except, as you know, we've kind of pointed out, the red zone was really a head scratcher. Why Georgia's defense was solid everywhere on the field except once they allowed opponents into the red zone.
That's one thing Kirby said yesterday too. The red zone on both sides of the ball has to get better.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, the thing is about, I mean, last year's Georgia's defense finished, there were only two defenses in the SEC that finished better than the Dogs did in league play and yards per play allowed, and those were Florida's and Alabama's. So there's actually, no, it was LSU and Alabama's, pardon me. Georgia finished slightly ahead of Florida there in conference play. So there's, you know, there's not a lot of room for Georgia's defense to move up there as far as that goes. It's really, you know, the offense that needs to take a big step forward and hopefully not squander what should be a solid Georgia defensive unit. I mean, let's not discount the big shoes that Maurice Smith left, though.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I think you could argue Georgia might have lost two games last year that they won without, if he never transferred here. The North Carolina game, he made a couple of big plays. It looked like the Tar Heels had long touchdown passes, and he came out of nowhere and batted balls away. And then he had the pick six against Auburn, which was Georgia's only touchdown in that game. And it looks like that spot's going to be filled by true freshman D'Angelo Gibbs.
Yeah, so that is no question a big spot to fill. And it's funny, Georgia went from not knowing that that guy was going to even be on campus to like a week or 2 weeks later, he makes a huge play in the North Carolina game, batting that one ball away. So he was able to come in and have an immediate impact. And you're totally right. Georgia's going to have to fill that role and find a way to do it. I know Dom Sanders is a ball hawk type player, but Maurice Smith, for the 1 year he was at Georgia, was a very special talent.
Yeah. I mean, Georgia got a guy. It's to go back to the old, you know, the thing from the summer that I was reading on ESPN.com about, if you could take one player from any team and make yours better, and it was like half the teams in the league, they were picking a player from Alabama, right?
Huh, yeah.
Right. So, like, oh, okay, yeah. So Alabama's got the best players, and if
like,
other
we'll take Minka Fitzpatrick,
yeah, sure. And if other teams in the SEC had Bama players, it'd be a lot better. And then, well, Georgia got an Alabama player last year. I mean, he was going back to the spring with them of 2016. He was, you know, starting in their nickel packages, and I mean, so that's the type of player Georgia had there on defense, and he definitely made a couple big plays last season, for sure.
Certainly did. So, Georgia with a lot of different questions and not a whole lot more time until Appalachian State. So, the fan day is coming up this Saturday, and they'll have an open practice. I went to that thing last year. It's really hard to pay attention to something like that because they break the field into, like, quadrants or into different, like, areas, and so you have different people working everywhere. So, you kind of just have to pick an area to pay attention to and pay attention to it, or else you're going to have your head spinning constantly.
Right. You probably just want to pay attention to, like, the quarterbacks and see, like, are they overthrowing guys? Are they, you know, how sharp do they look?
Yeah, but I think the biggest things, you know, we've hit them all already. The one thing we haven't really hit, the kicking game, what really happens there in terms of punting, in terms of the field goals, in terms of kickoffs. I know that Rodrigo Blankenship came in and sort of steadied the Georgia field goal kicking game last season, but he is very or was very inaccurate of anything outside of 40 yards. And quite frankly, not just in the SEC, but in big-time college football, you got to have a kicker that can hit field goals longer than 40 yards with consistency.
Yeah, I mean, you've got to be able to trust the guy, but, you know, I mean, really, you got to be able to trust the guy to go out there and make kicks from, say, 20 to 39 yards.
Well, of course.
Those are definitely the ones. And, you know, still, I mean, yeah, Blankenship did a good job of steadying things, but I'll be honest, every time Georgia went out there for a kick,
you know, you're
still
crossed.
Yeah, I mean, you're still holding your breath. I mean, and sadly, too, it's like extra points. Even on that, you're, you know, normally – a touchdown gets scored, like, well, I'm going to flip to another game because the extra point is basically a non-play. Mm-hmm. But yeah, with Georgia, I'm like, I better stay here and watch because who knows?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's one thing to look out for as well in terms of Georgia and going into next season. And fall camp's here, so we'll be ready for all the games, including the week zero, as Dave has been calling it on the morning show, where you've got – I believe Rice and Stanford are playing in Australia, and there's also some other games.
Oregon State and Colorado State. Yeah, I believe they some suited ESPN called it that because they've got like a countdown to kickoff clock going, and somebody asked them, well, you know, there are games that's actually not accurate.
That first the league, weekend.
Right,
games.
And apparently since none of those games are on ESPN.
They don't count them.
Right, they're not counting it, so I believe there's some suited ESPN that actually refer to it as week zero. Yeah.
That's pretty funny there. So Georgia in camp, the Falcons also in training camp over at Flowery Branch. And the big story going into training camp was Devontae Freeman and his contract situation. No long-term deal yet, but Freeman did say after one of the practices he wants to be a Falcon for life, saying all the right things. But it seems genuine with him, even though he does have Uncle Luke and his wife kind of in the background making all this noise. But it still seems genuine, and I still think they're going to get a long-term deal worked out for him. And with the drafting of the Wyoming running back this past draft, it doesn't really bode too well for the long-term future in Atlanta for Tevin Coleman.
Well, I mean, for me, it's Freeman that's an insurance policy for, because again, if he, I know he's saying all the right things, but if he wants to be paid like a top five running back and be that highly paid, the Falcons are going to let him walk. They're not going to sign him because they've got Tevin Coleman. Now they've signed this kid or drafted this kid from Wyoming too. So it's just not it's not a position in the NFL anymore that you want to be investing that much money in. And not when you've got an adequate number two in Tevin Coleman. And you look at their yards per carry. I mean, Freeman got a little bit more of the workload, but Coleman was, you know, they were basically identical in that front.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about looking at the two. For me personally, I would still want Freeman to be the guy, but this offense doesn't look like it's going to be any of the issue for this team. It's going to be, can the defense be better than they were last season? And the defense definitely got better as the season went on. There's no question about that. Vic Beasley had a great season, led the NFL in sacks, and he seems to be a guy. He went on this pass rushing summit that Von Miller, I guess, hosted out west, and he said that got him, you know, really fired up for the season. The Falcons also have Takaris McKinley, the player they drafted out of UCLA, probably going to be on the other side of the ball. One of the questions was Dwight Freeney, would they bring him back? And right now, I think Thomas Dimitroff said that they're kind of looking at the younger guys right now, and if they feel like they need to bring back Freeney, they can. It just seems like a no-brainer to me. I don't know why you wouldn't want him back. Granted, he doesn't need to be a training camp. I mean, you know what you get from a guy like that, and he's totally fine skipping it. A lot of the times you'll see veterans, you know, Brett Favre was given that kind of treatment towards the back end of his career. But I still don't see any reason why they shouldn't sign him back. That would even help kind of mentor Tack McKinley and bring him along.
Yeah, because I think he deserves some credit for helping Beasley break out last year too. He even taught him that little spin move
that was huge.
You know, that he had patented. So I think Atlanta probably will end up bringing him back, but in a 1 year, if the price is right, kind of deal, and just keep going from there. If he still wants to play, yeah. I mean, I agree with you. The Falcons should send him back. I mean, honestly, that you look at the team. The only real question mark is who's going to fill Chris Chester's spot at guard, because Chester retired. And honestly, for an offensive line that was solid last season, I mean, Chester was probably the weakest part of it.
Mm-hmm. So maybe you end up getting somebody better in there. You know, we won't know for sure. But I definitely think it's a question now with this team of, can they get over that Super Bowl loss? I mean, that's going to be – it's almost like the question marks on the field – aren't big. You know this team has talent. You know they're going to be good. They probably should repeat as division champions again. So with all that out of the way, the only real question is, mentally, can they get over that roadblock of the letdown in the Super Bowl?
Well, I hope none of them watched Preacher Monday night then. Have you watched Preacher on AMC?
I have not seen it yet.
Okay.
I've heard about it. It's good.
Well, there was a shot of there was a little kid in it who was wearing an Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl t-shirt, Super Bowl champions t-shirt.
Oh, no.
Except the score was weird. It said 20-17.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's in the future. Maybe the Falcons will win Super Bowl 52, 20-17. But the two Super Bowls they were in, they did not. You know, it was 28-3 was the score this past year. So if the Falcons are trying to get over that haunting memory, don't watch Preacher, because there was a kid wearing a shirt that said Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl champions 20-17. It didn't say who they beat, but it was kind of, other than that, but it was funny. That was on last night, and I noticed that.
Well, I will probably not be going and looking at that then. But that's the thing. A lot of people say that it's just this automatic that the Falcons won't be back. They'll take this huge step back. It just seems different. Like, this team has a different mentality. Dan Quinn preaches a different mentality. Plus, I think the youth of this team might produce some sort of naivete of, whereas a veteran team might hit you a little harder. The youth on this team might be too naive to buy into that.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely would help the defense, where they had all those rookies and second-year players that made the biggest impact last season. I just think one area, and as much as we all agree now that Mike Shanahan or Kyle Shanahan was, you know, the GOAT in the Super Bowl.
Well, even Ryan even called him out. Kind of dialed it back a little bit, but let's all be real. Matt Ryan was probably super frustrated, and eventually the dam was breached. You know, he kept getting questions about it, and finally he's like, basically, he's like, yeah, it was his fault.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's the head coach of the San Francisco 49ers. Now, if he was still Atlanta's offensive coordinator, then you would, you know, you would tiptoe around the subject a little bit. But now, hey, there's no big deal. Yeah, it was Kyle Shanahan's fault, and I think everybody realizes that. However, Atlanta's offense was really, I mean, historically awesome last season. And, you know, I think it's dangerous just to work on the assumption that you're just going to plug in a new offensive coordinator, one who has basically zero NFL experience, save for a short period of time. He was a quarterback's coach. Was it for the Titans?
Mm-hmm.
I think briefly. So, you know, I mean, just the thought of, okay, he'll just come in, he'll start calling plays, really never been an NFL coach, and all will be fine. You know, I think I'd be careful there.
Yeah, but it does kind of feel like this might be I guess it would be kind of like the Peyton Manning, Tom Moore dynamic that you had in Indianapolis. I kind of feel like that's how this is going to be, where Matt Ryan is doing a lot of the legwork.
Sure, but again, with Tom Moore, that was like a veteran NFL guy who would suggest, here's
like five plays, pick one.
Yeah, here's my suggestions for you, Peyton, you go and do it. And it's still, I mean, it's going to take Sarkisian to be aware of, like, well, what do I need to be suggesting in this spot? There's still that, you know, that lack of NFL experience that could take some, you know, a period of transition. I mean, it happened in the first year of Shanahan and Ryan. I mean, Atlanta's offense struggled a bit. And then they really meshed last season, and it was unbelievable what the Falcons offense did. But the one thing with Atlanta, and it is rare for teams that are in the Super Bowl. I mean, they didn't really lose anything from last year's team. I mean, you do have pretty much everything coming back.
Yeah. And so I think that that's a big reason why this team, that people should not fade them. And I don't know if your tunes changed a little bit, but you were one of the guys that was kind of saying maybe fade them a little bit for this coming year.
Oh, I still would. I mean, their schedule is
the schedule gets tough.
The schedule's difficult, and you look at a couple of spots. And granted, I mean, a couple of years ago, Atlanta went 13-3 and went 3-3 in the division.
Mm-hmm.
But they've got three division games that I think are tough. They play the Panthers on the road, which is the third straight road game Atlanta will play.
That's right.
They host Tampa Bay, coming off a Monday night game at Seattle, and Tampa plays the previous Thursday night. So you got the Bucs on extra rest.
Ooh, that one, that's a good note right there. You might want to fade Atlanta against Tampa that week.
And the Falcons on short rest. And then they go to New Orleans, which is also the tail end of back-to-back road games. Mm-hmm. Second time they'll play the Saints in 3 weeks in what probably could very well be the last home game for Drew Brees in the Superdome. Mm-hmm. So you got three spots right there that are very tough for Atlanta. I'm going to tell you, too, that first game against Chicago is a classic week one. You think one team's going to stink, the other team's going to be good. Road under a home underdogs in the NFL. Sam, I know you're going to that game.
I will be there, yes.
After Georgia beats Notre Dame.
Yeah, that's right.
But I just be careful there, because those first games of the seasons, the Bears think they're good. We all know the Bears stink, but in the first game of the season, the Bears still think they're good.
I would watch out for Leonard Floyd. That's all I'm going to say about that. Although I also get to see Vince Dooley throw out the first pitch of the Cubs game that Friday before the Georgia.
Is he really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know he was doing that.
Yeah. And so hopefully they'll let him sing Take Me Out of the Ball Game as well. Because
who are they playing
awesome.
Again?
Do you know? The Brewers, which is great because right now there's only like 2.5 games to separate those teams.
Yeah,
so
the Cubs
still
finally
close,
passed them though, right?
Well, they did. Yeah. But if it's still close, then that'll be a very important game. So looking forward to that weekend on the whole. But yeah, I do agree with you that it's not going to be the easiest game. Like, everybody's automatically giving the Falcons that win. But it is good that you're playing in Chicago in September as opposed to playing there in, like, December. So you get a break there. And I also think you get a break by the first game in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the Falcons. And the first real game, I'm going to talk about preseason games, is the Packers on Sunday Night Football. So it'll be a huge atmosphere advantage, I think, for Atlanta in that game. Most of the time when you play the Packers, there are a lot of Packers fans that come wherever you are in the country. I feel like since it's the first game at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, you're probably not going to have as many like resales from like Falcons fans to Packers. So I think the Falcons should have a decided advantage in that Week 2 game, Sunday Night Football against the Packers.
Well, and if the Packers fans don't feel like their team did anything to improve its defense over the offseason, then I wouldn't want to go to that game either.
No, because the Falcons could put up big numbers
against
that defense.
They couldn't stop Atlanta in that NFC title game.
They could not. And, yeah, I agree. I don't think it really did a whole lot to improve that defense. So the Falcons in training camp right now, and hopefully they get through that injury-free and they have a full-strength squad when they start the season up there in Chicago. A game, as Bram said, that I will be at. Last but not least on this episode, episode 14 of The Crossover, which, of course, is now on iTunes, also every week on 960theref.com. The Braves, and I mentioned that they just got swept by the Phillies in a four-game series for the first time since 1949 when they were still in Boston. They didn't do anything at the trade deadline. They traded Jaime Garcia, and that was it. Like, John Coppola, the GM, has been super active in this past offseason. He's made a lot of moves, has not been shy to make moves. So why didn't they do anything right now?
Because, I mean, the reality is, I guess, is the team is still building for 2019. And it is. I mean, it's crazy because, you know, they went and won those first two games at the Dodgers, including handing Alex Wood his only loss of the season.
And Jaime Garcia hit a grand slam in that game.
Yes, he did.
And now Jaime Garcia is on his third team of the year. He only made one start for the Twins.
But, you know, and it was weird because Atlanta was right there around the 500 mark, and you looked at the wild card standings and like, okay, you know, the team's close. But truthfully, there were too many teams ahead of them because, like, the Rockies and the Diamondbacks are way over 500. You know, between the Brewers and Cubs, you got two other 500 teams. You know, the Cardinals are lurking now, too, at 500. And, you know, the Braves, I mean, I think they put together some veteran names and some recognizable faces to sell tickets at SunTrust Park this season. But the reality is, it's a team that's still a couple years away from genuinely competing. So, I mean, I think Atlanta just stood pat there. But I think you see the side effects of making a deal like Atlanta did at the trade deadline and what it's had on the players, though, psychologically. Because I don't think it's a coincidence that the Braves traded away a starting pitcher and all of a sudden they've won one game since then.
Right.
Including, like you said, getting swept by the Phillies. Because, I mean, basically, the message from the front office to the team was like, we don't think you can win this season.
But that's the thing. If that's the message, why didn't they trade any of these veteran players? They still have Brandon Phillips. They still have Nick Markakis. I know Matt Kemp got hurt, so you can't really trade him. But there are pieces that teams would want. Matt Adams, another guy. They didn't trade any of those guys. So why are you keeping these veteran pieces and not trying to get at least something back for them, as opposed to you have these guys now that it's just kind of like, you know, what's the saying, dead man walking? I mean, you know, I don't think Brandon Phillips is back next year. I don't think Nick Markakis is back next year.
No, and I mean, I guess it just, I don't know what the market for him would have been. I would have thought maybe there'd have been a market for R.A. Dickey. You know, I don't know what they did. I know there were rumors that they were trying to trade Julio Teheran too, but I mean, Teheran's been terrible this year. What team that's a contender is going to look at a guy that's given up like 21 home runs?
Oh, that's a great point.
Yeah, I mean, we've got to add him. So, I mean, there couldn't be a much of a market for mid-30s second baseman, an aging second baseman or anything. And, Yeah, I mean, they've got those veteran players. I mean, Matt Adams might have been the one exception. He's only 28 years old, but you know, maybe the Braves are looking at him now and thinking, hey, we did strike gold in getting him, and they want to keep him around long term.
I'm just tired of the Braves having these players that can only hit from one side of the plate. I mean, you remember that rotation in left field they had years back where it was Matt Diaz and Ryan Langerhans because one couldn't hit one, you know, one couldn't hit lefties, one couldn't hit righties, so they had to keep like platooning them back and forth. It's like, how about you get a player that can hit both? And Matt Adams can't.
No, yeah. And plus, he's, you know, hopefully during the offseason, like you said, Markakis, maybe they can find someplace else for Markakis, and they can put, if they want to keep Adams around, they can put him in the outfield or something.
Oh, and you have Acuna as well in the farm system, who's supposed to be their number one prospect, so at some point that guy's going to be ready to come up.
You know, I know Lucas Sims is starting, I believe, tonight, which
That's
is Tuesday
right.
when we're recording this, but Freeman's got to get back to first base, too. That's just where he needs to play. He doesn't need to play at third base. He's done okay there, but
no, that the whole thing is ridiculous. Like, he's one of the best defensive first basemen in Major League Baseball. Get somebody else to play third base. You have Sean Rodriguez. You have some you guys that can play multiple positions. Yoan Camargo as well. So put him back at first base and let him stay there. I think that whole thing is asinine.
Well, and, you know, Camargo's interesting because basically he's replaced Dansby Swanson.
He's been awful.
Swanson's not even playing anymore. But then that's fine. But then send him down because, I mean,
Swanson is down.
Oh, they did send him down?
All
right, I missed
that
while I was on vacation,
yeah,
I guess. Down. Okay, well, good, because he needed to go down if he wasn't going to play.
Yeah, so putting him in AAA is something that needed to happen. He was struggling very much at the plate, and maybe now he can work on that second base shortstop thing with Ozzie Albies. You know, they can work on that while Dansby Swanson is trying to improve his hitting, because he was god-awful until they decided to finally send him down.
Yeah, I mean, it felt like it was 0-2 every time he was at the plate. But, yeah, I mean, if you're not going to play him, then you do have to send him to AAA. So it's pointless just to have him on the big league roster sitting on the bench.
It really is. So that'll, I guess, pretty much wrap up this edition of the Crossover. Don't really have anything else to get to here. I will be heading to Chicago pretty much within, you know, 24. Actually, I'm leaving at 6 a.m. Wednesday morning. We're recording this on Tuesday. So I'll be out until next week. So catch Dave and Logan, or Dave and Adam, on the morning show back in town, Brame. So you and Jeff will be reunited on the home team. So looking forward to listening to that. I will say it one more time. We are on iTunes. So please head to iTunes, subscribe to the Crossover so you never miss an episode. Leave us a review, because the more reviews we get, the higher bumped up we get. So you're helping us out. We're not just begging here because of our own vanity. We actually will get helped out with your reviews and star ratings. So please do that on iTunes. You can catch us every week now on iTunes, also on 960theref.com. So for Chris Brame, I'm Sam Franco. Thank you so much for listening to episode 14 of The Crossover, and we'll be back next week with another exciting episode right here on 960theref.com.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.